through.
Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Oh my, we're back. It's Monday nights, the hour of truth, to be subtitled for the foreseeable future, the Article 5 show. We're going to talk about it. We're going to bat it around. We're going to see what we can come up with. And in the end, we're going to fix this mess that we find ourselves in. So today, there was a big brouhaha, I guess yesterday, a clown, of all things, at the rodeo at the Missouri State Fair, put on a mask of President Obama. You've all heard about this already, and used it to do his job of distracting the bull during the bull riding session. Somehow or another, the PA announcer came out and asked the crowd if they wouldn't like to see the clown slash President Obama run down by the bull. The crowd went wild, and before the applause and crazy rantings of the crowd had subsided, Lieutenant Governor Kinder was on his tweet saying, oh, this was despicable. Claire McCaskill was decrying this thing as horrendous and demanding that someone be held accountable. The fair board was disavowing any knowledge of it and denouncing it, and Lacey Clay was calling this the ugly face of intolerance. The clown, who pulled his Saturday Night Live stunt, and I say Saturday Night Live stunt because I well recall just episode after episode after episode of Saturday Night Live where some guy had a George Bush mask on his face. And I don't remember any prominent national figures tweeting it and condemning it and calling for someone to be held accountable. The Richard Nixon mask was very, very popular. There weren't any tweets, but I don't even recall any letters to the editor suggesting that someone be held accountable for that. So the clown responsible for the Saturday Night Live stunt has been banned forever from Missouri State Fair. He'll probably become famous now, though, and be on the Sean Hannity show as part of a ongoing guest call-in, guest host call-in, whatever. Rush Limbaugh. Hey, yeah, there you go. Rush Limbaugh should be picking that up. Meanwhile, Billy Long is splashed all over the front page of today's Springfield News Leader. I'm going to tell you something. I lived in Kansas City when I was stationed in the northwest part of the state for a few years. I lived in St. Louis when I was stationed in extreme eastern Illinois for a few years. And I lived, of course, most of my life down here in Springfield. And I've lived in Boston. I spent some time in Los Angeles. I have not seen a paper so openly liberal, so openly a shill for the progressive administration as the little bitty Springfield News Leader. Had an article all over the front page today. I didn't bring the paper into the office with me. I'm sorry. I certainly meant to. I believe that this was not an APUPI story. I believe that this was a local writer who hoped probably to get picked up by UPIAP, maybe did. But anyway, Billy Long had, when questioned about the proposed food stamp cut and the proposed farm bill amendment, all of which is deader than a doornail now, suggested that the proposed $20 billion of $80 billion total cut, and the cut was going to be over 10 years. So we're talking out of an $80 billion food stamp program, a cut of $2 billion per year for the next 10 years. Long suggested that the $20 billion cut was about eliminating fraud, that would eliminate the fraud in the food stamp program. And he was immediately called to task by lots of quotes from lots of people, the writer clearly calling him to task. Only 1% of all the entire food stamp program is fraud. And they went on to say that fraud was trafficking or selling your food stamps, trading your food stamps for drugs, and that fraud was retailer fraud. A retailer takes a guy's food stamp, shrinks up a $100 food stamp, a grocery order, and gives the person $100, or usually more like $80 or $70. And that's the extent of fraud in the food stamp system. Well, I have two observations there that I'd like to share with you from my perspective. One, forget about trying to justify all the cuts that we need to make in food stamps as something to do away with fraud. All the cuts we need to make in food stamps, which is about 60% of the program in its entirety, is not to do away with fraud. It's to do away with a growing population of federal handout dependents. My gosh. If you want to define something as fraud in a program that was mentioned three or four times in this article as a program that is there for the truly needy, for those who truly need it, it said a couple of times, for the truly needy, it said a couple of times, then it has to be fraudulent when you continue for 5, 8, 10 years to give these benefits to someone who could work but just won't. Now, I don't know what percent that is. I don't have any hard numbers on that, but if you're listening to me tonight, you know 5 people like that. I mean, you personally know 5 people that fit that category. So it's tens of millions of people receiving food stamps who could and should be working. And they've been receiving them sometimes for generations. We're going to talk tonight about Article 5 again. We're going to go back and review a little bit about what it is, how it works. The things we've talked about previously, we're just going to very quickly touch on. Then we're going to get into some of the kind of silly, crazy arguments against doing this. And we're going to talk about some of the things that we need to do, we hope, to get this thing rolling, to get enough people on the wagon to make the wagon actually start rolling down the hill. Before we get into that, after the break, I want to take a minute to say that we are going to, most of you have at least heard about Levin's new book. He suggests this. He talks extensively about Article 5. In fact, the new book is about Article 5 and our need to do it. I have all the respect in the world for Mark Levin. I happen to like him. We're probably going to use some material from his book and tip our hat to him every time we do. But I want to say that Levin is the backbencher on this one. I've been on this thing for 2 or 3, well, more than that, for 3 or 4 years, maybe 5. I've been all over this. I've been wanting to get this done. I've met nothing but resistance from both my liberal friends and my conservative friends. I hope that the fact that Levin is on board with this thing is going to give it enough national momentum to actually get something going. I'm certainly on his wagon, and I would like to ride his name recognition to the point of us being able to actually do something with this. I talked with a friend the other night when this came up on our Saturday night fair tax show, who's also been on this wagon for a while, and it's been a frustrating ride. We've not any of us been able to figure out how to get this thing going. We need a lot of things to come together to make this happen. I hope I don't bore you to death, but I'm on this soapbox now every Monday night until it happens. That's why I say we're going to subtitle this Hour of Truth the Article 5 show. And I'm gonna preach this gospel until somebody takes it to heart and enough people heed the word and we actually get something done. So we're gonna talk about how Article 5 came about in just a minute. I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
I didn't see any method at all.
Well, we're back. We have a caller on the line. I'm Dave. Who's this?
Yeah, hi, this is Ed Johnson in Joplin, Missouri. How you doing, Dave?
Hey, Ed, I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm doing okay today.
What's new?
I read your thing about proposing amendments to the Constitution. If I could propose only one, it would probably be to repeal the amendment that allows for direct election of senators.
Yeah, absolutely.
Original intent, there would be no such thing as a Harry Reid. He couldn't possibly be elected to the Senate.
Absolutely, and there'd be no Obamacare either. I mean, if the United States Senate's job was to, as employees of the interests of the state, was to look out for the good of the state, There'd be no Obamacare.
Elected by the state legislators. When your state, that's how it was put to me when I first began to study into this. I wasn't even aware of it until a couple of years ago. It was explained to me by my state representative that if he were to call Roy Blunt, and if he were the one who was electing him, Roy would actually answer his questions.
He'd absolutely answer his
calls, and that just doesn't happen now. So
that's right. No,
anyway,
that's absolutely right.
I won't take up too much more of your time, but I did want to put that in, and thanks for all you do.
No, thank you for calling, Ed. It was a good call. Okay, that was Ed Johnson from Joplin, and you know, I'm glad to hear him on this. I'm glad to hear people who are about this. Now, Ed, of course, was talking about the repeal of Amendment 17 when the Constitution was first written. The founders wanted to make sure, first of all, that the people were represented. So they established a House of Representatives. And the House of Representatives was one representative for a certain number of people. Per certain number of people, there would be one representative. And these directly represented the people of the United States of America. Now, they recognized that there was a problem there, that the passions of the general population flow quickly, flow backward and forward. 1 year they want to, you know, 1 year they want everybody who's gay to be married. 1 year they don't want anybody who's gay to be married, back and forth and back and forth. They also recognized something very important about direct democracy, and that is that it is easy with this flowing passion for the majority to trample all over the rights of the minority. That's two things that were problematic with the way the House of Representatives was constructed. The House of Representatives, in that it was elected directly by the people were going to be electing, a small number of people wanting to be represented in Washington, D.C., rightfully, were going to rightfully be electing John Jones down the street, a person they knew. And the founders thought that was perfectly good, that is a sound method of representation, but that it would lack some statesmanship. It would lack the deliberation that needs to go into the thoughtfulness that needs to go into making things happen. And so they set up this second house, a bicameral. And the second house, and we're not going to go into the whole schoolhouse rock of how things happen here, but I want you to understand that this second house, the United States Senate, was set up to protect the rights of the state of Missouri, not necessarily the various factions of people within the state. They had their house, okay? But the state of Missouri, and one of the reasons that this was done was because the founders were, and this is one of the things that is apparent today, and one of the reasons we're sitting here talking about Article 5, the founders were jealous of their state's rights. They were fearful of a central authority, and they wanted to make sure that the federal government remembered forever that they work for the states, not the other way around. That they were there to serve the states, the 13 states, and not the other way around. That the federal government never became a lord over the 13 states. That is what they feared. There were founders at the Constitutional Convention who, absent Article 5, were going to refuse to sign the Constitution because these are the things they feared. And out of that fear, and out of the fear of the passions of the people, they established this second house. And the Senate was elected by the legislature of the state. So they were elected by you, but indirectly so. I mean, you elect the people who go to Jefferson City, and the people in Jefferson City who represent you then elect two senators to go to Washington, D.C. and represent the state of Missouri. Now, these electors in Jefferson City, they are once removed from the passions of the mob. And they also have a solemn duty to the state of Missouri as an entity to protect the sovereignty of the state of Missouri, to protect the entity that is the state of Missouri. And what Ed was saying is exactly right. These people in Jefferson City, these elected officials then, were the direct employers of the senator. And so when I say we wouldn't have had Obamacare, we wouldn't have the Department of Education. You know, we wouldn't have any of these departments who come down here and absolutely drain states of all of their capital, of all of their resources, of all of their sovereignty. We wouldn't have any of this crap if the Senate, because remember now, back to the Schoolhouse Rock thing, any law has to be passed by both houses. So it would have to be a law that gets through the muster of the direct representatives of the people and gets through the muster of the House that is looking out for the good of the state of Missouri and the state of Oregon and the state of North Carolina. So there are tons of things that we bemoan today that would not even be anywhere on the horizon if the Senate still worked for the various state legislatures and represented the will of the state. Unfortunately, long about the end of World War I, long about the Great Depression, things were not moving rapidly enough for the progressives. The big brother government wasn't working, and I was talking about this very amendment with a friend of mine, Lloyd Sloan, who's going to be with us in a couple of weeks to talk about one of his favorite amendments, about the 17th. I don't remember even and it's only been hours ago, exactly what year that came about. But it was Depression era. Things weren't moving rapidly enough into big brotherhood for the progressives, and the seed was planted that these senators, like the representatives, ought to be directly elected by the people. It only seemed fair. Now this is the same, and not the same people, of course, but the same progressive movement that is now trying to suggest that the Electoral College be done away with, and that the people, the popular vote, directly elected the president. We can talk about that some other time, but it's the same kind of thing. So now you've got Roy and Claire out there, not giving a crap one way or the other what's good for the state of Missouri. And in fact, they say, they just come out and say, well, you know, we have to do what's good for all the people. You know, Missouri said 70-30 to Claire, no, no, no on Obamacare. And Claire said, we don't give a shit what you want. We don't care what you think. You know, well, of course she's going to get reelected. She's got hundreds of millions of dollars flowing in from Monsanto and all of the insurance companies that loved Obamacare and et cetera, et cetera. She had a little help this last time from her opponent, because all she's got to do is float out some TV ads and float out some, oh, my mom, here's my mom. My dad was a veteran. I do things for veterans. I take care of sick dogs and cats. Vote for me. And that's all it takes. I don't want to talk about the mindless voter, but I do want to talk about the fact that if Claire and Roy worked for the legislature of the state of Missouri, what Ed said, I mean, when my legislator picked up the phone and called and said, hey, Roy, this is Burleson down here in Jeff City. Roy would say, yeah, what is it? What is it, my friend? What can I do for you? Because that's where Roy's got to go for his next vote, isn't it? So, Repeal 17 is one that we definitely need. How do we get there? How do we get to Repeal 17? How do we get – because I'm going to tell you right now, you want to talk about fair tax, or you want to talk about Repeal 17, you want to talk about Repeal 16, you want to talk about any of these amendments, you want to talk about term limits for senators and representatives. You think the House of Representatives and the United States Senate is going to vote for these things? You think the House of Representatives and the United States Senate is even going to send those amendments out to us to be ratified? You think they're even going to propose such amendments? Well, hell no, they're not. You're talking about their power now. So how in the world do we get around the fact that the people who have the power are daily deciding for themselves what their power is? I mean, we specifically design a system of government where we, the people, and we, the states, determine how much power we give to these people. And now they've set themselves up through the courts and through the body politic as the sole arbitrators of how much power they have. How do we get the power back? Well, the answer to that is in Article 5 of the Constitution of the United States, and we're going to get to that here in just a minute.
The emergency disrupt system is now activated.
People need to realize is economics, you know, is not about numbers. It's about humans. It's a very significant component to what makes us human. It's a very different program. It's called Getting There From Here, and it's about about building a roadmap to restoring constitutional governance in the United States. It's about how we can win elections nationwide with conservative small government principles. It's about how to build and broaden a coalition, a majority coalition that's committed to having a smaller government. And then the second night I call dismantling the monstrosity. And it's about how practically to shrink the federal government, I mean really shrink the federal government via the Republican Party. But we need a much, much smarter Republican Party, and one that's not scared of its own shadow. We need to have people who are seriously committed to constitutional principles, to family values, to a smaller government, running the Republican Party. And we need to have strategies, which is what the whole seminar is about, where we can make sure the benefits of smaller government are going straight to people. If you remember my first seminar, I love analogies. And in the first one, I talk a lot about cancer, how the government has really become a cancer that's consuming our economy. And in this one, I talk a lot about alcoholism, which is a very different disease. But politicians get to Washington and they become alcoholics. And you know, they can't understand how they could do anything but grow the government. And you know, it's like we need to have an intervention with the government. We need to say, you know, you're out of control. You are an alcoholic. And you tell that to your congressman, and he's like, well, you know, we're gonna phase out my alcohol consumption over the next 10 years. But, you know, first, you know, I just ran out of scotch, so first thing I got to do is go to the liquor store. And then when I come back, we can talk about how we're going to, you know, phase out my drinking problem. That's where most people in Washington are holding right now. So it's about the necessity of eliminating government programs instead of cutting them. Because when you cut government programs, they just grow faster. The great divide in the Republican Party seems to be between a few hundred Republicans in Washington, on one hand, and everybody else. The millions and millions of Republicans all over the country really want to have a smaller government.
Folks, you just heard Lauren Spivak, the free market warrior. He's returning to St. Charles County here on August 29th and 30th at the Family Vision Library for two nights of a free seminar so that you can learn about capitalistic values and free market principles. Bring your kids, bring your family, bring your friends, and join us at the Family Vision Library, 2020 Parkway Drive, St. Peters, Missouri, on August 29th and 30th at 6:30 p.m. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. For information on this event, it's all there on the calendar page, and I'll see you at the Family Vision Library on August 29th and 30th with Lauren Spivak.
You wrote the book with a movie in mind.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Well, now, that's my favorite little soundbite right there. Absolutely. Okay, here we are. We're back. Back in 1787, a bunch of people got together, and what they came up with was the Constitution. Turned out to be the Constitution of the United States. They met for the first time in May, on May 14th. They met day after day after day, taking only Sundays and the 3rd and 4th of July off. They met for 89 days, and then on the 90th day, they presented before the committee of the whole the document that they wanted to review. This is the next to the last day of the convention. They presented the document that they wanted to review and to go over for and they went through, you know, this had been 89 days. They had debated. They had figured out how to build this bicameral system that we just spent the last segment talking about. They had figured out how to structure the executive, how to structure the judiciary. There was 89 days of debate and back and forth on this. Many, many plans talked about, many, many plans looked at. And so we come up to the next to the last day of that convention, and they start going through the articles. Here's, and they start making one or two minor adjustments to these articles to come up with the final copy that the that would be presented for signature the next day. And on the 15th, that 90th day, they got down to Article 5. And someone read Article 5. And this is from James Madison's handwritten notes of that convention. Article 5 was read. The Congress, listen up now, listen to this carefully, especially if you are already familiar with what Article 5 says. The Congress, whenever 2/3 of both houses shall deem necessary, or on the application of 2/3 of the legislatures of the several states, shall propose amendments to this Constitution. I'm going to stop right there after that phrase. There's more. The Congress, whenever 2/3 of both houses shall deem necessary, or on the application of 2/3 of the legislatures of the several states, shall propose amendments to the Constitution. So bear in mind now, I'm out of Madison's handwritten notes now, and I'm out here flying by the seat of my pants. Remember that in this phrase of Article 5, there is no way for the people or the states even to directly amend the Constitution. The Congress, whenever 2/3 of both houses shall deem necessary, they can propose a Constitution, an amendment to the Constitution. Or on the application of 2/3 of the legislatures of the several states shall propose amendments to this Constitution. So when 2/3 of the states appeal to the Congress for a proposed amendment, the Congress will then propose an amendment. The amendment may or may not look like what the amendment may not be proposed. It may not even make it through the committees to the House, then to the Senate, then finally out to the people. It may not make it out in anything like the form of what the states wanted. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of the House shall deem necessary, or on the application of two-thirds of the legislature to the several states, shall propose amendments to the Constitution, which shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part thereof, when the same shall have been ratified by three-fourths, at least, of the legislatures of the several states, or by the conventions in three-fourths of the states, as one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress. That was the original form, that was the intended form, that was the first form of Article 5, the form that appeared for approval prior to signing on the next to the last day of the convention. Now we're back in Madison's notes. Mr. Sherman expressed his fears that three-fourths of the states might be brought to do things fatal to particular states, as abolishing them altogether or depriving them of their equality in the Senate. He thought it reasonable that the proviso in favor of the states importing slaves should be extended so as to provide that no state should be affected in its internal police or deprived of its equality in the Senate. So Sherman comes along screaming, "Oh no! What might these states do if we give them that power? Oh no! What might happen here if we let people just willy-nilly amend the Constitution?" Sound familiar? In any way, shape, or form? Back to Madison. Colonel Mason, now this is one of my favorite paragraphs in all the writings of history right here. Colonel Mason thought the plan of amending the Constitution exceptionable and dangerous, as the proposing of amendments is in both the modes to depend, in the first immediately, in the second ultimately, on Congress. No amendments of the proper kind would ever be obtained by the people if the government should become oppressive, as he verily believed would be the case. So Mason, the statesman, stands up and says, this is dangerous. This is a dangerous thing here. You know, you have given all the power to amend the Constitution to the Congress. The people have no power. And when the government, not if the government, but when this central government grows to the size that it becomes oppressive to the people will never be able to amend their own constitution. Back to Madison. Mr. Governors Morris and Mr. Gary moved to amend the article so as to require a convention on applications of two-thirds of the states. Mr. Madison did not see why Congress would not be as much bound to propose amendments applied for by two-thirds of the states as to call a convention on the like application. He saw no objection, however, against providing for a convention for the purpose of amendments, except only that difficulties might arise as to the form, the quorum, and which the constitutional regulations ought to be as much as possible avoided. The motions of Mr. Governor Morris and Mr. Gary was agreed to, blah, blah, blah. So, and then Sherman goes on to try to strike out the entirety of Article 5 after that, and he got, a motion that did not pass. So there we have, kind of in a nutshell, the evolution of Article 5, and we come up then with Article 5 as it reads today. And that is, and I had that right here. The way that the Article 5 reads today, the Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to the Constitution. And that's the only way the Constitution's ever been amended, folks. or on the application of the legislatures of 2/3 of the several states shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states, or by conventions in 3/4 thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment can deprive a state of its equal representation in the Senate. And again, back to Ed Johnson's call, that was back when states were actually directly represented in the Senate. So we come down with this new and revised Article 5, which becomes part of the signed and finalized Constitution, that says whenever the Congress votes so, or when 2/3 of the states apply to the federal government for a convention, there will be a convention. I mean, this is not something then that is done or not done, depending upon the whims of the House of Representatives and the Senate. It is not something that is done or not done based on the president. When 2/3 of the states call for a constitutional convention, there will be a constitutional, and I keep saying constitutional convention, and that does confuse folks, because it is not, in fact, a constitutional convention. There is no provision in the Constitution for a constitutional convention. The only time you could have constitutionally a constitutional convention is if we decided that the Constitution needed to be replaced. And then I would guess the 50 states would at that point be sovereign and on their own. There would be no more United States of America. And the 50 states could, or 48 states or 22 states could get together, I guess, and design themselves a compact, a constitution that would bind them together. But the only thing that could be called is under Article 5 is an amendment convention, a convention to propose amendments to the Constitution. Now, let's don't go crazy here. And when I say let's don't go crazy, go totally crazy. Bring me all the amendments you want to. Bring me 500 amendments, and we'll ship them out there. We'll see if we can't get we'll see if we can't get them proposed, and we'll see if we can't get them drafted and through the style committees, and then get those 500 amendments out and see if we can't get 38 states on board for them. 38 states, my God, that's all but 12 states, isn't it? How you think you're going to get 38 states to agree that some, well, anything far, far right or far, far left, you name it. It can't happen. It can't happen. We are in a period in history right now, brothers and sisters, where the amendments that would see their way through 38 states are the amendments that would strengthen states' rights, that would put the federal government back in its place. That is the tide right now. That is the flow right now in this country. That is the only common flow in this country right now, is get the federal government off our back, give us back our states' rights. And I think that in the history of this country, since the founding, when these people went to Philadelphia to jealously protect the sovereignty and the rights of their states against an abusive central power. I think since then we are at the only other time in history where the pendulum is this way. The pendulum is back toward we want our country back. The pendulum has swung to the point where we could get amendments through 38 states, in my opinion, with little difficulty on some of the major ones that need to be done, that would enhance state power, that would put the federal government back in its place, and that would get us closer to the compact that came out of Philadelphia on day 91 of the convention. What would some of these amendments need to be? I mean, those are the kinds of things we need to talk about. How? What we need to talk about is, and I said I've been frustratingly pounding this drum for 4 or 5 years now. I get very little, except, well, this is what we need to be totally too scared of to do anything like this. This is why we can't do this. This is why we shouldn't do this. And I get this from people who spend inordinate amounts of their own time talking about how the federal government is destroying the states, about how the federal government is way out of its borders, about how the federal government is assuming all of this power, about how the states are losing all their sovereignty and all their rights. And from the people that preach this message every day, I hear things like, oh, we can't do that. Oh, we shouldn't do that. Oh, we don't want to do that. When year after year after year, you have got to become more and more and more convinced that you ain't going to do this any other way. I mean, what you're asking for is a group of people in Washington, D.C., who define their own power, who define the limits of their own power daily, who are totally and exclusively in charge of deciding how much power they have. You're asking them to give that power up. And year after year after year, you have got to become more and more and more convinced that that is not going to happen. I mean, this is it. This is all there is. And it was wisely handed to you by the founders of this nation, not to write a new constitution, but to go back in and to take back the power. Mason said, this is a thing that needs to be triggered when the government, the central government we're creating here today in 1787, he said, this government is going to become too oppressive. It's going to become too powerful. It's going to assume too much power to itself. And this is a necessary mechanism to make that stop. That's what Article 5 of the United States Constitution is. Now, we need to be talking. We need to be getting this dialogue moving. We need to be deciding how we can do this, when we can do this, what it's going to take to get this done, and then we need to be deciding, as the core group of American citizens who want this thing done, what kind of amendments we need to make to the Constitution. Those amendments need to take power back away from the central government, need to put the central government back in its box, and back in the box that was constructed for it. Article 1, Section 8, for the legislative power. Article 2, for what the executive can. I mean, my God, the president of the United States is a figurehead leader of the administrative branch of government, of the executive branch of government, who goes around the world and represents the United States to foreign countries and declares declares war and doesn't declare wars and doesn't provide asylum to millions and millions and millions of illegal aliens, and doesn't make laws, and doesn't decide what light bulbs you can use and can't use, and doesn't decide what you can and can't put in the river, and doesn't decide what you can and can't do on your farm. I mean, these are things that are being decided by an executive branch that should be, for all intents and purposes, absolutely inconsequential to our day-to-day lives. The executive branch should be something that has no impact and no effect on our everyday lives. And it is making three-fourths of all the laws and rules and regulations that drive this country. There's only one way to fix that. There's only one way left to fix that nonviolently. This is what we need here is a nonviolent political revolution. There's going to be no nonviolent political revolution of take my party back. First of all, your party is corrupt when it's good. Your party is unconstitutional when it's doing what you think it's supposed to do. So there's none of this. We're gonna solve it by taking my party back. We could. There's been a lot of talk lately of solving this thing from the bottom up. We could do that if we had repealed 17, or if we never had 17. We could fix this thing from the bottom up if, in fact, the Senate still worked for the state, but they don't, and that day is gone. This, listen, I'm not, I have no words here that came down from a high mountain carved in stone. Okay? I have no ideas or thoughts that came to me in a vision on the road to Damascus, brothers and sisters. I am open to any other ideas, but I see no other way to take our country back nonviolently than by invoking Article 5 of the United States Constitution by demanding that our representatives in Washington call a convention of the 50 states to propose amendments to the Constitution that, when ratified by 38 states, could not be vetoed by the president, could not be changed or vetoed by the House of Representatives or the Senate, but would become part of the Constitution of the United States. The Supreme Court would have no say on whether or not these things go in. The legislature would have no say on it. The president would have no say on it. When approved by 38 states, these amendments would become part of the whole Constitution. 347-677 1835. 347-677-1835 to get involved in this discussion.
If you drive a car,
no sense calling it anything else. I mean, it is a tax, so and it's a fairly regressive tax. An awful lot of people in Iowa and in Oregon and Washington and Utah and places where we are, they're very poor people. They're going to pay a lot more money for electricity.
If you make under $250,000, you will not see your taxes increased by a single dime.
Hello, it's Dave, and I'm here to tell you that on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, we talk about the Fair Tax on the Fair Tax Show. That Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Missouri Grassroots Radio, we explode the myths, we tell the truth, we get to the bottom of this tax code that ought to be the one to replace the IRS. Get involved in the discussion. Learn everything there is to learn. 347-677-1835, Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m., Missouri Grassroots Radio.
Specifically said that it is not constitutional under the Commerce Clause. They said it is constitutional under the tax. And as to the question about raising taxes for the middle class, if I may, sir, let's just look at the record. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates that in 2016, 4 million Americans will pay the mandate penalty or tax. 75% of those people will make less than $120,000 a year. And the CBO says between 2012 and 2021, those folks will pay $27 billion in additional taxes.
Okay, I'm back again. I've been sitting here talking for 20 minutes before someone said you have mic troubles. And I hope you didn't give up on me and you're still here. Where do we go from here? That is the question. We've talked a little bit about where we need to go. We need to set short-term goals. I'm at 347-677-1835. We need to have an open dialogue specifically about how we get this done. We need planning. I know what the first step needs to be. The first step needs to be that all 20,000 of us here, right tonight, we need to write letters to the state representatives. And not just your representative, not just your senator. Take a whole Saturday, invest an entire Saturday afternoon, whatever your Saturday is, in this thing. Go to house.mo.gov, go to senate.mo.gov, send an email there to every senator, send an email there to every representative. You're not going to get, don't be disheartened, you're not going to get personal responses back from all of them. You shouldn't. You should better get one back from your representative and your senator, but you shouldn't expect to get one back from a representative or a senator to whom you are not a constituent. But it will be noted by them that they received 20,000 emails, and us 20,000 need to go out and get five more people on board. And if two of those five people sit down and invest a Saturday afternoon in writing, there's another 40,000. So that needs to be our first step. I mean, Missouri needs to be the first state in this decade to say to Washington, D.C., we demand an Article 5 Amendment Convention. Now, how do we get this ball rolling with at least 32 other states? Because two-thirds, not three-fourths, two-thirds of the states have to demand the convention before the convention becomes a thing. And once two-thirds of the states do it, it's not something that the Senate and the House can stop. It goes. So how do we get two-thirds of the rest of the states, how do we get 31 other states to do what we've just done? That's going to take a lot. That's going to take a lot of work. That's going to take some degree of money. And that's where I think things start falling apart. It's going to take a lot of work. That's right there is where things start falling apart. It's going to take a lot of money. I mean, I can get on here every Monday night for the next century, and I can talk about Article 5. I can write about Article 5. I can preach about Article 5. I can go around to meetings and college campuses and talk about Article 5. I can encourage everybody that this is what we need to do. I can even envision a time when tens of thousands of Missourians are all nodding their head in the right direction that this is what we need to do. You know, the government is tromping all over the state of Missouri. The government is tromping all over the Missouri Constitution. They're tromping all over our gun rights. They're tromping all over our property rights. They're tromping all over our water rights. They're tromping all over our education system. I can easily see that the time has come when the vast majority, not just kind of a lot, but when the vast majority of us hick Missourians are nodding our heads in the right direction, but then comes the time where it's actually work. Then comes the time where, as the founder said, where we have to invest our lives and our fortunes in getting this thing done. And that's where we run into a problem right there. Each and every time, it seems to me like you know, Roy Blunt and the Free Air Society or whatever the hell that group is that's putting in smoking bans all over the state. And I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to get that kind of punch, that kind of money. It seems like these people can just always come up with money, the money they need to get things done with the workforce they need to get things done. And with that money and that workforce, they're getting all the wrong things done. But it seems to me like here's this thing here that we need to do. Here's this thing where 70% of the Missourians are disgusted over the whole Obamacare thing, which here's the way to fix it. Here's the only way to fix it. Roy's in favor of Obamacare. Roy Blunt favors Obamacare. Claire McCaskill favors Obamacare. We're never going to get anything done in spite of the fact that 70% of their constituents do not favor Obamacare, want it gone, finished. What do we do? I mean, these clowns who snub you, who despise you, who do everything against your best interest, against what you've told them to do, who refuse to represent you, they have no trouble getting the money. They have no trouble getting the workforce. They have no trouble getting the momentum to do what they want to do, to get reelected time and again. How the hell is that? Why can't, what do we need to do? I'm lost. I'm lost here. I mean, where are the callers tonight? Where is anyone who has any kind of idea at when it comes to what do we do next? Where do we go from here? How do we get this thing going? I mean, I can envision a day when Missouri does it. We've got the mindset here. But where do we go from there? What amendments do we need to propose? I mean, I'm all about Repeal 17. I'm all about the fair tax, as you know. I'm all about balancing the budget. I'm all about term limits for senators and congressmen. Levin's book, Tip Hat Mark Levin, suggested something I didn't think of, I'm ashamed to say, and that is term limits for Supreme Court justices. My God, you know, why are these guys, why when you get a guy in there who decides that President Obama can make you buy something as long as he calls it a tax and not a penalty, why are we stuck with him for the rest of his life? Why are we stuck with somebody like Ruth Bader Ginsburg for the rest of her life? I mean, she's already sitting up there slobbering all over herself, wearing a damn diaper probably. Why are we stuck with that for the why are we stuck with those people for the rest of their lives? Sitting up there making decisions against our best interest, making decisions in direct opposition to what the founders had in mind when they wrote the Constitution. Making decisions that rob you of liberty instead of protect your liberty. Why are we stuck with those people for life? So, I mean, what kind of amendments do we need to make? Every one of them ought to have to do with returning the federal government to its position as a servant of the states. Returning the federal government to its rightful position as the servant of the states. There are some things that the states can't do individually. Declare war, coin money, regulate one another in their trade, sign treaties with foreign countries, declare war. There are some things that the several states can't do. And for that, they appoint a servant to do it for them. They appoint a central body to do it for them. And that is the that is what these amendments that we come away from this convention with need to be. They need to be amendments that put the federal government back in this box that was built for it and shut it. Is that, you know, I here's a good question. Is this something that we're going to need to do every 200 years? Every 250 years? Every 300 years? If it is, it is. You know, I will be happy to set this thing right for my grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren. I will be right to give them a chance to carry the torch. Right now, they don't have a prayer. They don't have a prayer. They are already going to be spending 70% of all the money they make to pay our debt.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the household, then we start making better investments.
Okay, now what more do you need to convince yourself that the federal government, the collective, needs to be put back in its box? What more do you need than to listen to that?
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to...
Break through our private kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents. We need to break away from that. We need to get, you know, we need to separate ourselves from the idea that kids belong to their parents. We need to come to grips with the fact that she ought to be the one educating your kid about what's right and wrong. That she and her cronies ought to be the one in charge of your kid's future. I mean, what more do you need to say, God, I got to wake up. I've got to wake up and we've got to get this right. We've got to fix this thing. That last promo, I want to expand on a little bit. There's only one thing only that Missouri Grassroots Coalition collects money for. We don't, If we need some paper and pencils, we buy it out of our pockets. We don't ask for money for that. when we want to print some flyers or some trifolds for an event we're going to, we print them on our home computers. We buy the paper, we buy the ink, and we print them up, and we take them. We don't ask for money for anything all year long, except this one thing, and that is the Secret Santa. Every year on Christmas Eve, we go out to the big store in the neighborhoods of the state of Missouri, and we find layaways that haven't been paid off yet, that won't be paid off in time for Christmas, and we pay them off, and we have the store manager call the parents. These are always layaways with exclusively toys in them. This is a program for children. Always layaways with exclusively toys in them. Always layaways that are 3-4 payments behind. Not some parent who was, you know, just saving the last payment for Christmas Eve because they don't have, you know, they don't have anywhere to store this stuff. Always layaways that are in danger of being returned to the shelf. And we pay them off, and we call the parents and we say, come pick up your child's Christmas and get it home and wrap it and put it under the tree for tomorrow morning. It's a great program. You've been more than generous out there. Our listeners have every year since we've started this have doubled what we did last year. We start this thing off in February of every year, and we run it all year long so that we don't have to come to you in November and December when you've got all this other stuff coming at you, and beg for money. All these other things that hit you in December, they're all worthwhile. The red kettles, the kitchens, the shelters, the angel trees, the toys for tots, your own family, of course, your church, of course. All of these things are just as important as what we do. So we spread out our begging for the entire year, hoping that that you will take advantage of that and donate generously to Missouri Grassroots Coalition's Secret Santa program. You need to go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Spell that all out, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the Secret Santa button at the top and use the PayPal button to send us some money. Send us a generous amount of money and help us make Christmas what it should be. You know, I mean, we are the group, us libertarians and you conservatives, we are the group who sits around and says, no, it is not the job of the government to take care of needy Americans. It is the job of better off Americans to take care of needy Americans. And year after year, you prove that we mean it when we say that. And we ask you to help us again this year. Prove we mean it when we say that. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, please. Secret Santa button's at the top. On that page, you get a PayPal button. And just drop a little cash our way. Every dime that goes in there is used to buy these presents. Nothing is used for, there's no overhead, there's no advertising. This is all the advertising there is. These radio shows that we do Monday through Saturday on Missouri Grassroots Radio, that's all the advertising that there is. That's all the begging that there is for this thing. There's no investment in collecting this money. There's no investment in dispersing this money. There are no costs to this program. Okay, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, Secret Santa button, PayPal button. We we've come to the point in the show where we kind of need to lay out where we go from here with this informative / lecture / series. Next, we start talking about specific amendments that we need to do. 2 weeks from tonight, Lloyd Sloan is going to join us with an exciting. He and I spent a couple of hours together, maybe a year and a half ago now on this show, talking about the state repeal amendment. We're going to talk about that again in a couple of weeks. 2 weeks from tonight, I am really looking forward to that. Lloyd is articulate. He's entertaining, and he's got some great. He's smart. He's got some great ideas. He's a Harvard man, so we'll excuse him for that. But he does. He has some great ideas, and he's put the study into it. I mean, he's put the time into it. He knows what he's talking about. Come along for that. Be ready to call in with your questions. It's not complicated, but it's intricate. And Lloyd tends to be a little professorial. So you'll have questions as you listen. You'll need some explanations. So come along and listen and call 347-677-1835 on that night and find out what the state repeal amendment is all about. And then we will talk about the amendment that we need to recall senators and congressmen. This is, in my mind, one of the most important things that we need to do. We're going to track down the history of that. We're going to figure out in about an hour segment why the founding fathers didn't think of this when they wrote the Constitution. They didn't think, evidently for some reason, that term limits were necessary for congressmen and senators. Why do you suppose? We'll be talking about that. I'll be interested in hearing from you on that. Then we'll be talking about why it's never been attempted that a senator or representative from Washington, D.C. be recalled when they're obviously, I mean, why the hell haven't we tried to recall Claire McCaskill when she thumbs her nose up at 70% of her constituents? Why isn't there a Missouri state constitution article that allows us to do that or that lays out how we need to do that? Why isn't there a U.S. constitutional section in Article 1 that tells us that we can do that or that allows that to be done? And how do we go about wording or getting that done? What do we need to be wary of as we do that? We don't want to just willy-nilly have someone changing representatives and senators every other week just because they're pissed off at one or two things their senator did. That is also not complicated, but intricate. We'll get there. I'll tell you what, I'm going to quit for tonight. I'd kind of expected a little bit more participation. I continue to be frustrated in my drive here to getting this thing done. I realize I'm a little bit of a zealot. I was reminded today by one of my dear friends that that I'm a little bit of a zealot with these kinds of things, and so you know I continue to be disappointed. I continue to be frustrated. I won't try to hide my frustration tonight. Thanks to Ed Johnson, we had a good little talk about the 17th Amendment and how and why we need to get an amendment specifically to repeal that amendment. The fair tax, which I spend a lot of time talking about on Saturday, on the Saturday night show, the fair tax show, would require a repeal of the 16th Amendment, probably just as part of what we would call an amendment on taxation, which would in one fell swoop repeal the 16th Amendment and institute a fair tax. So, and that's going to be another thing we need to talk about. You know, it's fairly understood that any amendment proposed can deal with only one subject. So, you know, we need to talk about how we go about doing that. How in one amendment do we repeal 16 and establish the fair tax? Well, that's one subject, if you word it right. We're going to get into some of those things next week. 2 weeks from now, Lloyd comes along. We're going to talk about state repeal amendment. On Tuesday nights, that's tomorrow, and 7 days from then, and then 7 days from that, too. Cynthia Davis. Wow, what a show. Cynthia's show is called Homefront. It's on 7 o'clock on, I'm sorry, she's on at 8 o'clock on Tuesday nights. What an entertaining host Cynthia is. I mean, you're going to get a couple of laughs here and there. You're going to get a couple of insights here and there. You're definitely going to learn something. You're definitely going to come away from that feeling a fellowship and some sort of support in your. In your own life, some sort of I'm not alone in this thing feeling when you come away from that show. On Wednesdays, Lisa Payne Nager comes along, the culture vigilante. Unlike Cynthia, who's more laid back, wise mom type. Lisa, if you haven't caught one of her shows, is a fireball. She's out there to let everybody know that we are here to make sure that everybody on the planet gets it. That's the Culture Vigilante show. I promised you this last week. I'm still negotiating with our new Thursday night host. Hopefully next week I'll be able to break that news. And then Saturday nights, I come along again. Yep, it's me, dull old me, with the fair tax show. But it's not as dull as it used to be. I mean, we are really getting into the exciting part of the fair tax discussion now. We spent some weeks going over the dry stuff. Where did the income tax come from? What's bad about the income tax? Why? Why is it inherently evil? Now we finally got down to what is the fair tax? How does it work? Why is it better for the country and better for you individually? Had a really good show, I thought, last Saturday night where we went into an actual case study. And we showed how, at the end of the year, you had paid all your taxes. I mean, with the same salary you had last year, you had paid all your taxes. You had purchased exactly as much as you purchased the year before. And you still had a good-sized chunk of money left over. All from the fair tax, all from instituting the fair tax. Your standard of living could go up as much as 50%. We actually showed that we used a pencil and a paper and a calculator. It was exciting. And we've had a lot of feedback on that show. We've had a lot of feedback from people who actually went through the exercise with their own circumstances and were surprised when they came away with the numbers they came away with. But it really is all that simple. So join us Saturday night. When one more time we go into the fair tax. I'm going to leave you now, and I'm going to come back not as frustrated, a little bit more enthused next Monday night. And I hope we'll have a more dialogue and more discussion about this need for Article 5. You know, there's a lot of people out there I hear from through the week that say that have all kinds of reasons that this can't be done. All kinds of, you know, listen, call in. Let's have the dialogue, folks. I don't put anyone down. Your ideas and your thoughts are valid, and they'll be entertained here. You'll be treated with respect. We'll swap ideas. We'll probably argue once in a while about it. But my gosh, the dialogue is what we need. So, you know, all these people that I hear from all week long, and then I hear, you know, that they listened. I was listening last Monday, and you said this. Well, I disagree with you for this or that reason. Well, hell, let's call in. Let's talk about it. Let's get the dialogue going. Don't just keep that disagreement between you and me. Let these other 19,999 people know what you're thinking about this thing and what you think the dangers are of it. Okay, I'm going to go.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.